Mary, did you know? It's time for the SaftaCast, and I'm your host, Scott C. Hey everybody, how you doing? Thanksgiving is over with, and we are into the December month, that month of many holidays, and holidays aplenty. We got some programming notes for you, though, about the show. If you look forward on your schedule, you look at the calendar, you'll see that December 24th and December 31st are Wednesdays, the day we usually put up content. So here's the thing, folks. We're not going to do anything major on those 2 weeks. Yeah, we're going to take some time off and enjoy the holiday season with friends and family on our own ways, and we're not going to be here doing full show and a full promo those 2 weeks. However, we will be putting up some content. We'll be putting up some holiday-themed content, some short bits for you, some fun little stuff on December 23rd and December 30th. Now, we're not going to put it up on the days so that you can enjoy it, and they'll be short. They're not going to be too long, maybe 4 or 5 minutes at most, just to put something up there for your holiday season for you. So keep that in mind, folks. That's what we're doing. We're going to be taking a couple weeks break, and we will return to our regularly scheduled programming in January. We'll remind you, of course, in the next episode and on the website at saftacast.com. And you can find us on Twitter at saftacast. We'll remind you on there. We'll also remind you on our Facebook page. If you go to Facebook and search SaftaCast, you'll find us. Now, speaking of the holiday season, maybe you don't celebrate any particular holiday. Maybe you celebrate multiple. Maybe you celebrate none. But I will tell you that odds are, during the next 3 to 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, you're going to have to buy a gift for somebody. Some reason you're going to have to. Odds are. Okay? I'm making an assumption, I know, but odds are you'll have to get something, even if it's just for me on my birthday, which is, you know, I'm a Christmas baby, so yeah, plan your gift getting accordingly. One holiday idea I have for you, and you can probably guess what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it nonetheless. You can go on over to sundresspublications.com and click on store, and there you can get a whole number of things from the Sundress Academy, including books by Sundress authors, including a couple that we've had here on the program. We've got tickets to workshops upcoming, including one on December 6th, which is a jewelry and craft making workshop just in time for the holidays. No experience with crafting or jewelry making is needed. You can get in on that one for details. Of course, you can check that out at the store. You can also get the naming rights to one of the animals at the Sundress Academy for the Arts. They've got nice holiday graphics, too, for them this time. It's pretty neat. You can buy original artwork from our visual arts director, Chris Johnson. Or if you're not feeling like you want to get something tangible like that, you can help out the Sundress Academy by making a donation. And get this, your donation is tax deductible, because what comes right after the holiday season but tax season? So that's a tax deductible donation, and it'll make you feel good inside. It'll fill you with the holiday spirit in ways you cannot possibly begin to imagine, and I know you can imagine quite a bit. Hey, one of the things, special item I want to draw your attention to, just went up this past few days, and I'm here to tell you about it. The 2015 Sundress Academy calendar is now available for pre-sale orders. Now, if you checked it out last year, the Sundress Academy did their 2014 calendar featuring a number of the Sundress men in their finest sundresses and similar outfits, including me. I'm the December one there. So right now, my picture is hanging in my own office and in many other people's places, too. Now, I will not be in the 2015 calendar, but that is no reason to not get one. This year's theme for 2015 is gender-swapped literary characters, and I've seen some of the promo shoots from this, some of the early footage from it, and it is looking fabulous, my friends. Check this one out at the Sundress Academy store. Go to sundresspublications.com, click on store, and for $20, you can get the 2015 calendar, and all the profits from those calendars goes right back into the Sundress Academy for building whatever our next project is, and we've got a lot coming down the pike. Now, today's interview is a good one. We have Darius Stewart on the program, and he was a joy to talk to, as you will soon see. Good man, great conversation. It was a pleasure having him on the program here. We've been wanting him on for a while, and it was great to finally get him, and we talk about a great number of things. And you're going to like this one, I promise. You're going to love this one. It's going to be a fun one as we get into the holiday mood here on the program. But first, a very special holiday theme song
from the forum members of SomethingAwful.com.
Hey, Darius.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you pretty good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, just fine.
Excellent. Good to hear. Well, welcome to the program, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just woke up and I saw it was like 6:34. I was like, God damn it.
It happens. I figured it was something like that, you know?
Yeah, I just had a big... Well, my friend who was supposed to meet me for lunch, I was like, okay, it's 3 o'clock. She's not here. And so I just ate my meatloaf, mashed potatoes, and asparagus. And then I was out after that.
Food coma.
Yeah, food coma. Exactly. Thanks so much for, you know...
Well, thanks for being here, man. You know, it's my pleasure to always bring on interesting and cool people. So, as I always do on this program, I got to kick this off by bringing up the burning question that is on everyone's mind right now.
What is that?
Well, the burning question on everybody's mind. You ready for this one?
Oh, are you talking about Ferguson?
No. This the burning question on everybody's mind. What is your least favorite holiday song?
Oh, God. The least favorite, there's so many. Actually, Seth MacFarlane did one on, Kelly and Michael, the Kelly and Michael show. What is the name of that song? I can't remember. That's why I don't like it, because I can't remember the damn name of the song.
Are there other ones that you do know the names of that you absolutely hate?
You know what? I'm not that partial to Silent Night. I think it's pretentious.
I was baffled by that one as a kid.
It is. It's like, it's pretentious, and also it's kind of, yeah, when you say you're baffled, I think that's maybe where I'm going to, or leaning toward, like, why I don't really care for that song, because it's like, yeah, I know it was a Silent Night and Holy Night and all so, but there's something creepy about that song.
When they're like 5 or so and they're singing it in church and they say, Round Yon Virgin, I'm like...
Yeah.
I'm sitting there, you know, I wonder how many children ask their parents and learn what a virgin is from that song.
Right. Exactly.
How do you go round a virgin?
How do you go round a virgin? Yeah, it's like, what are they going to make? Are they, like, playing some kind of sex game or something, and she's, like, not wanting to put out?
I mean, is it, like, ring around the rosy kind of thing?
It's like some kind of tetherball kind of game, you know, where they're banging each other back and forth. I don't know.
Just punch the virgin back and forth, you know?
Right. I don't care for Jingle Bells. I don't care for Jingle Bells. And Jingle Bell Rock, you know, either one of those versions, I don't care for those songs.
Jingle Bell Rock can go to hell.
Yeah, seriously. There was one more that I thought of. Can I talk about my favorite, actually?
Let's flip the coin. Favorite one.
Yeah, my favorite one, I like... Christmas Time Is Here from Charlie Brown.
Not a bad one.
Yeah, love that one.
Why do you love that one so much?
Because it reminds me of like what Christmas is supposed to be about. It's innocence. It's, you know, it's Charlie Brown. I mean, who didn't, you know, from my generation, like who wasn't watching, you know, the Charlie Brown Christmas special? You know. And it's just those voices, it just makes it seem less commercial, even though it's become very commercial.
Oh, yeah. Little Debbie Snapcakes and everything in between, you know, the message of anti-commercialism. And then, here's 30 seconds for McDonald's.
Yeah, exactly. So they used it in a way that, you know, it wasn't intended to be that way. You know, when we were watching it growing up. But I love, that's my all-time favorite. My second favorite is Maybe It's Cold Outside.
I'm curious why you love that one.
Because they always play it at Christmas because, you know, I can understand it's cold outside in many places. But there were times here in Knoxville where You know, I mean, you can go outside without a coat or a shirt, and you would be just fine. And I like it because it's kind of a ubiquitous song. But it's also a little creepy because this is a man that's like, why are you so desperate to keep this woman in your house? It's like, why are you playing her with a dream? And all of it.
Well, he wants to go round yon virgin.
Yeah, he wants to go round yon. I don't think this one was a virgin.
Well, a lot of commentators treat that one as a very creepy, date rapey song.
They do. See, I don't like the date rape part of it. I really don't. I mean, if you really want to analyze the song, there is that part of it that it's, yeah. One of my really good friends who's a poet, we were talking about this one time, and she mentioned that, and she's a female. I think that's it's not only from a female perspective that you get that interpretation, but what they don't realize is that the song can be sung from two different perspectives. It's like a cat and mouse kind of song. I looked it up on Wikipedia. And, I mean, there could be a woman singing the man's part and a man singing the woman's part. You know, and then what does it become, you know?
Yeah, I never thought about that, if you swap the genders in that song.
Genders, absolutely. Then what does it become? Then it becomes, you know, The Graduate.
Hmm. Could see that happening with it, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so that's why, you know, and I read about, they sang this song, the songwriters, they sang it at a Christmas party, you know, with all their friends gathered around. So I knew then that it wasn't about that. So it's like, I tell people, you know, it's a good damn song, do your damn research, and, you know, stop calling good songs date rapey.
I thought I was going to get in trouble once when I said that, yeah, it may have those creepy overtones, but damn it, if Dean Martin was singing that to me,
yeah,
I'd be right. I'd be like, yeah, I'm not leaving this house. I'm sticking next to you, man.
Yeah, it's just a good song.
I get a lot of flack because one of my favorites is Last Christmas.
Last Christmas I gave you my heart.
Yeah, and a lot of people are like, well, how can you like that? I'm like, well, have you ever heard any version other than Wham's? Because there's a lot of good ones out there.
Right, right.
You know, and it's a good, catchy, small, cute song. Yeah, I find myself December singing it going, Last Christmas, I gave you my heart. You know.
Yeah.
it's an earworm. It gets into your skull.
It does. It's something that, you know, you like it, but then it just gets stuck. Like you said, under the skull, and it's like you can't get that tune. The Mariah Carey one that's really...
Oh, All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Christmas Is You. Everybody's singing that damn song. And actually, I like it. It's a good one. But it's also one of those, like Last Christmas, that just, after a while, it's like, okay, I cannot hear this song for another year.
And that's the problem. I find that a lot of people hate Christmas music because it gets so overplayed. Like 20 or so songs get so overplayed that you're sick to death of all Christmas music.
I know. Like at my job, bartending, it was the 30th. It's not even December yet. And one of my bar guests was like, oh, God, I hate this music. You tell somebody to turn this off. You know, I was like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Because, I've been there for, you know, 6 hours, and I'm hearing the same damn song. And it seems like I've heard it 1,000 times, because they played it when I first got here. Then another 30 minutes, it's like it came on again. And so, yeah, that's the thing about Christian music with me. It's like I just keep hearing the same songs. Because they just keep playing the same shit.
Can they, I mean, with the place you work, I'm not knocking them or anything, do they do like internet radio or satellite radio where they have like 1,000 songs in the playlist?
Well, see, I don't know about how many songs that's even in the queue that they use, but it is satellite radio that they use to play music throughout the restaurant. And I'm not sure if they use like this, you know, the same battery of songs or.
Yeah.
Or what? But it seems like it's just, you know, maybe 50 that they just keep, you know, recycling.
Yeah, I became obsessed with Christmas music about a decade ago because I got sick of the same 20 songs and hearing people go, oh, I hate Christmas music. So I said there's got to be more out there. So I began hunting Christmas music at record shops and vinyl collectors and all that. And amassing a collection so that when I went on radio, I would play a 6 or 8 hour block of Christmas music, but nothing that anybody else would ever play.
Right.
Like, All right, hold on to your hats, folks. Here comes the demo of John Lennon's Happy Xmas War Is Over, where he doesn't have all the lyrics yet and his voice cracks multiple times because he can't sing it yet.
Did you like that?
Did you know that John Lee Hooker recorded a Christmas track? Oh, yes, he did, and here it comes. I was so happy a couple years ago when I discovered that Death Row Records put out a Christmas album back in the 90s. I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
So, it's like...
I wonder what that was like.
Blowing up my students with like, okay, here's Snoop Dogg and Nate Dogg doing Santa Claus Come Straight to the Ghetto, the James Brown track.
No, actually, Babyface did one that was really nice.
Yeah, that was on the Motown Christmas album.
Well, no, that was Motown. He was with Arista, or in LaFace.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Christmas song by Toni Braxton, that's a beautiful rendition of that song. You know, everybody calls it Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, but it's not the name of the song.
No, it's the Christmas song.
Christmas song.
The Nat King Cole track, you know.
Now, Voice of Men, who I believe was with Motown, they did a Christmas album, and it was more secular than traditional. You know, I mean, they did, you know, like Let It Snow, but it was not Let It Snow that we know. You know, it was their own, you know, and it was a very successful album, actually. When it comes around this time, I put them on.
Yeah, I don't get burnt out on Christmas because I've got just so much of it. It's like, okay, you know, speaking of Motown, yeah, they put out a double disc album a few years ago. Like, disc one is all the 60s Motown of Stevie Wonder, and Gladys Knight is on there, I think, but the Supremes. And then the second album is more contemporary stuff that they had in the catalog, and it's amazing stuff to listen to.
It is. I don't know how they do it. They harmonize so well. I saw them, they've lost, what is his name, the one that sang bass.
Which group?
With, Boys to Men.
Oh yeah.
So it's basically just a trio of the original four. But they still managed to get those harmonies together.
I got nothing bad to say against Boys to Men, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I just wish that they would have or had an opportunity to be a force like Earth, Wind, and Fire, who's still going strong after God knows how many decades.
Earth, Wind, and Fire has a Christmas album out.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that. That's the first one. And I was like, really? I had to go look that up and see. I was like, they have to have made another Christmas album. I actually heard that on the radio as we were driving back to Murfreesboro last week. And, I shouldn't say last week. It was on Saturday. But they were talking about, you know, they were on a show. And they were talking about this album, and I was like, you have it? And I was like, okay, I'm going to have to look that up and get that.
I've given it previews on the internet. I was kind of sad, though, that their version of – they redid September as December.
December, right.
But they didn't change any of the lyrics, really. I think they added the word snow in there. That's it.
That's funny.
I'm like, you couldn't do a Christmas? I mean, Bette Midler did a Christmas version of From a Distance.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she re-recorded it as, you know, like, all about, like, looking out on Christmas Eve.
Ah, okay.
But
speaking of Bette Midler, I was seeing Barbara Streisand has this new album, Partners.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like some of the lineup. Of course, I love the fact that John Legend is singing on there with her. And that's a good song. I've heard that one. And she's got, who else? John Mayer and the country singer from The Voice. He's the judge on there.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Blake
Shelton.
Blake Shelton, yeah. I mean, it's only 10 songs. Hold on, Scott. I've got somebody at my door.
Okay, no problem.
I'm doing my interview. Right now. Oh, you're going to have to make your choice. That's my sister.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't know what time this was supposed to start. It was supposed to start at 6, and it's 6:55.
Well, we could bring your sister on, and she could tell us the dirt of you.
Yeah, you should. Yes, you do. Come here. Come on. Please
welcome Darius's sister.
Yeah.
We're getting two interviews for the price of one here. I love this deal.
Yeah.
Really?
Can you hear her, Scott?
Oh, I can hear her.
Okay.
Welcome to the program.
I guess. I haven't got signed up for it.
So what can you tell us about Darius that some embarrassing stories of his childhood for our listeners?
He used to get beat up by his little sister.
Oh my.
No, she did. She if I mess with her too much, there's one example I can give you. She took a bottle of dishwashing liquid. And she hurled it at me as I was running away from her, and it caught me right behind the ear. And I mean, it cut me bad. The cap of it. Like, I don't know how.
Do you have a scar from it?
No, but she has a scar.
Yeah. I got a scar too. He ran me over on a bicycle. I fell off my bike, and he ran me over on my other brother's bike.
Now, did you do that on purpose, Darian, or was that just pure accident?
It was a pure accident. Of course, I jumped off the bike and checked on her. You were young.
Because I was riding a bike young. I was probably about 5 or 6 or something like that.
Did you have training wheels?
I ain't riding no training wheels.
Oh, well.
I was riding a bike at 4, no training wheels.
Well, she had to be at least like 6 at the oldest. And I would have been like 10. How old are you now? And I'm how old?
It doesn't. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
It's not a pure 4-year difference, but it's close enough.
Fair enough, yeah.
I came over here to eat.
I know she did come over to eat, but you gotta sit down since you interrupted.
I didn't interrupt. Nothing. I could have slid on in here and went down the plate and then the keys in the car.
Was the door locked?
I don't know. I didn't.
You just knocked on the door, so you could have just come on in.
Oh, I don't do that.
Well,
I knock everywhere I go.
Well, it's your brother's house.
I know, and I'm still going to knock.
Okay. So this is what we do, Scott. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's family. 'Tis the season. You know, we just had Thanksgiving. Now we're up onto the December holidays.
Yeah.
So it's all good. And you just had a birthday last week, didn't you?
I did. It was on Thanksgiving.
Oh, happy belated birthday to you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I'm 35, for anybody who wants to know.
You're 35. Well, a true gentleman never says his age, but okay.
I thought that was true, lady.
Well, I'll turn 36 at the end of this month, so.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't care. Now, when I get, you know, to my 40s and such, I might start fudging the age. But I'm happy to be 35. I'm announcing it loud and proud.
There you go. You're 35 years old. You're in the prime of your life still.
Yep. Yep. I got another 70 to go.
Well, hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
With the way science is going, it's possible.
I know, right?
I'm looking at the idea of body transplants pretty soon, you know. Maybe. Get a new set of lungs, you know, that might help.
Yeah. It would help me if I would stop smoking cigarettes.
You and me both. It's a bad thing to be a radio host, to be also...
Yeah. No, I'll be at the bar, and I'm trying to greet somebody. I'm like, and, you know, clearing my throat. So there's a lot of muck in there.
Yeah, some mornings I wonder if I need a shop vac or not for my lungs.
No.
Just ram the nozzle down there. There we go. That'll work.
I know. But no, it's all good. It's all good.
Hey, like, you know, if we didn't have our vices, we wouldn't be writers.
We wouldn't be. I get inspired, but not as... I can't get too inspired, if you know what I mean.
I understand.
Yeah, because it used to work. I remember one of the first poems I ever got published, it was from coming home after...
A wild night.
A wild night, yes. But I was in my early 20s then, and I was up and I wrote this poem that is one of my favorites. And, you know, I didn't even have to revise it or anything. I didn't feel like I needed to. I wrote it in that one night while I was, you know, wilding out, and it became that. And I wrote, you know, other poems under the influence, but, yeah, I can't do that now.
I tried it in my early days when I was 20, 22, you know, thereabouts, early 20s, and tried writing a couple, and I looked at them sober, and I'm like, boy, this sucked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. These days, if I try that, yeah, it becomes very obvious, like, no, you don't need, if you're going to write, either, you know, you can have one, but you can't have any more than that.
So now I stick with the uppers of tobacco and caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I'm pumping out 7-8 pages at a time.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, get more down. Right. Starts sounding like Beavis from Beavis and Butthead.
That's how my mind feels if I get like that. If I do too much caffeine, I can have a couple of cups of coffee, but that's it. Because because then it goes into some other mode, and I really can't think because my mind is racing too much to even concentrate on what it is I'm trying to say.
We writers, we have a very strange brain.
I think so, too. I do, because just yesterday, you know, I'm thinking, right now I'm writing book reviews, but, you know, I say I got to start writing poetry, and, you know, I'm always, I really don't know how poets really write, like, when do they feel compelled to write a poem, and I know we're not supposed to be talking about the writing aspect.
That's okay. We can drift into it.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking, it's like, what can I write about? And then it's like, all of a sudden, like, something in my mind is like, I've been trying to tell you this forever. You need to write about this. Like, all the things that have been in my mind, you know, are, you know, just knocking around inside trying to get out. And I say, okay, that's how poets write. That's how writers write. You know? And so I said, well, I'll let you out, you know, in the new year. But I still have to concentrate on, you know, the other writing first. You know, so they have to, you know, wait in line. They need to be, you know, calmer and patient. And then it's
like planes taxiing on a runway.
Uh-huh. It is. And don't you hate that?
Oh, I do.
It's like, once you leave the gate, it's like you expect to be off the ground in, what, 30 seconds to a minute. At least that's the way I feel.
Yeah, I just flew a couple days ago, and I'm on the plane. They're like, oh, we're going to be on the ground here for 12 more minutes. And I'm like, but there's no other planes at this airport right now.
Yes, but what we don't understand is there may be planes coming in. I saw two planes the other day that was, I mean, from my vantage point, I was like, this looks so dangerous because it looked like there was one plane trying to descend and there was one plane ascending, but they were so close. Then all of a sudden I saw the one plane that was descending slowing down. I was like, oh, because I was like, y'all about to collide. Mm-hmm. It was so scary. It was so scary to watch. But, they made it happen.
I think part of the issue is that when you're on the plane, you have a limited view out the window. Uh-huh. And you don't really know what's going on out there. So they're just like, we're going to hold tight here for about 15 minutes. Okay. It's not like a car where I have all these different windows I can look out of.
Right. Right. Hold on, Scott. My sister has to go. She has to go pick her daughter up.
Well, we wish her the best, and have a good evening.
You too. Nice to meet you again from the fly.
Yeah.
Thank you, baby.
All right, you're welcome. Yeah, she had to come get her some mashed potatoes and gravy and meatloaf and asparagus. That's what you really came for. She loves asparagus. She used to get the canned asparagus. And, yeah, I know, right? I was like, no, I will make you some asparagus. And ever since, this was probably 5 years ago. And I made her some asparagus. And ever since then, she's got to have it.
What do you do to it? Do you do anything special to it?
Well, you know, of course, you know, I boil it and then I shock it in ice water, blanch it rather, in salty water, ice water, and then I get me some garlic and chop it up, mince it up, and throw it back into the skillet to saute it until it's warm through.
Sounds very simple.
It is simple, but at the same time, there's too many processes. it's not like, you could have just, regular old boiled asparagus, but you want some kind of caramelization.
You sound like a man who actually knows his stuff when it comes to the kitchen.
I would say so. I think a lot of people would say so.
When did you get into cooking? Was it like something that happened in childhood? You just got into it?
Well, I was, raised in a house where, we didn't go out to eat often. It was always, my mother would always make home cooked meals. And even in our neighborhood, if we ate at a neighbor's house, like, you could smell like people's houses, the smells from their cooking coming from their houses. I just remember it just smelling so good. Because, it was cheaper to just cook your own meal. And I guess, as I got older, just thinking about that, I started experimenting and failing at it. Not knowing you don't supposed to fry chicken on high, for instance, because that's when you cook the outside. The inside will give you salmonella if you eat it.
I haven't had that happen, but I am no longer allowed to cook certain chicken parts in our household.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the hardest ones are like the whole birds.
I don't have a problem with those. I just throw them in a crock pot.
Like a whole chicken?
Yeah, with vegetables, herbs, and such, and leave it on for 6-7 hours on medium, and it comes out pretty good.
Really?
simple meal. I'm not allowed to do chicken legs, though. For some reason, I can't do chicken legs anymore. Like, every time I come out, I cut them open, and they're just covered in blood.
Oh.
Every other part of the chicken I can do fine.
Well, how are you cooking those legs?
I was baking them.
You were baking them? On what temperature?
350.
For how long?
About 30 to 35 minutes.
Oh. Maybe there's something wrong with your oven.
There may have been, but I can do, you know, breasts just fine. Wings just fine. Whole chicken, yeah, just fine. Thighs, love doing chicken thighs. And
yeah, I mean, you can cook, you have to cook them longer, but you know, because you do like chicken breasts and stuff like that, they can dry out very quickly. They don't take that long. But the legs, they don't. It seems like at 350 for 30 to 35 minutes, they should have been fine.
They should have been. I don't know what happened to them, but after the second time of screwing them up, I'm like, that's it. I'm no longer allowed to do this. And I'm not allowed to fry chicken in my house.
Were they at room temperature?
Because
were those eggs at room temperature when you put them in the oven?
I don't remember. I think they were defrosted, so.
Yeah, it's the best thing. Make sure that they're at least at room temperature when you start cooking.
I'll keep that in mind if I'm ever allowed. My wife has said no.
Think about it. You know, it takes time just for it to warm up to even cook. You know, but I would also say don't give up. You know, maybe it needs to go for 40 minutes. That's what I do. If I feel like this is enough time to cook anything and I look and see that it's not, I'll give it another, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, and I'll go back and check it. I mean, that's what you do as a cook. You just keep checking. That's what I do as a bartender. You know, we have simple syrup, for instance, that we use for a lot of drinks, and especially when you put citrus, like limes or lemon in it. Depending on the lime or lemon, you don't know that the standard, you know, amount of simple syrup is going to make the drink a mix of sweet and sour that you want for your drink. So you just keep trying stuff out and you taste it and you just go from there. You know, it's easy. It really is. I mean, just cooking, I think it's easy. You know, it's all about trial and error, and it's always best to, like you say, you're undercooking your legs, then just put it back in there. Don't give up on it. Just put it back for a longer amount of time and see what that does.
Maybe I will. Maybe I'll try it sometime and just mess with it. Because I love doing chicken thighs. It's cheap and effective. You throw them in a rotisserie and spice them right, and they come out great.
Yeah. Great. Well, that fat really does a lot with those thighs. It really keeps it moist, and it's leaner, you know, even despite the fat on the thigh, it's still a pretty lean piece of meat, I think.
Mm-hmm. And you can't argue if you got a good piece of skin on there, too. And
It has, you know, all those bones in it. People don't realize that. Like, bones help cook the internal part of the meat. So when it reaches a certain temperature, it starts to cook it from the inside out. That's why you like bone-in meats, because that bone, it does. And it helps to keep it tender because you don't have to cook it for so long.
And then the bone can be used, in some cases, for the marrow. And I've known people who are like, oh, marrow is disgusting. I had it for the first time like 2 years ago, and I was like, where have you been all my life?
Really? I've never done bone marrow.
It can be very tasty if done right.
Like, how do you do that?
I have no idea. I got it at a restaurant in Boston.
Huh.
And I was like, wow, this stuff is amazing. And then I think Aaron, the boss at Sundress, did it one time, and I was there for it. So.
Yeah, okay.
Is there a when you cook, is there a signature dish for you, one that you love to do above all others, and everybody looks at you and goes, damn, you make the best blank.
Fried chicken.
Really?
Yeah. My fried chicken wings. I remember I like using tiger seasoning as my seasoning. Lord knows why, because it's full of MSG.
It's your weapon of choice.
It's my weapon of choice. But when I was in grad school at the Mission Center for Writers at the University of Texas, I was making fried chicken. And I was like, I don't have any, they don't have tiger seasoning there. So I had to think of something else. And I was in the grocery store and I saw that Lawson's had this garlic chicken broth. So I'm gonna try this. So what I did was I brined my, you know, if I say I'm gonna make chicken on Sunday, on Friday I put, you know, all my chicken that I was gonna prepare to a container, you know, large enough for it, and poured all of that garlic chicken broth into that container and let it brine until I was ready to cook it. And it infused that meat so beautifully. It was like the best chicken. You know, and then of course you have to season your flour too. That's another thing. Like, you season by layers. Like, whatever you're doing, like, you season every bit of it. Don't just season the meat and then knock the flour and vice versa, you know. So I did that. My pork butt, my beer braised pork butt was another favorite.
Ooh.
Yeah. That was some good stuff. I mean, I literally had friends, they were, you know, in grad school with me. These were like the PhDs in English folks that got me to, I mean, they would buy it. It's like, will you cook this for us? You know?
Hey, if you cannot go wrong if one of your friends is a good cook.
Right. And that's so funny because I am that friend that you want to cook for you. I can't have people cook for me though, because I feel like, no, you're not going to do it right. Even though they can be brilliant as a cook, but it's like, I have this kind of conceited notion that only I can, you know, can cook for a group or hell, even myself.
Mental note, next time I'm in Knoxville, I gotta hang out with you and have food with you.
Oh yeah. I've one of my cousins got in the kitchen with me. I was making some what we call like New Orleans style shrimp and grits. You know, and I was talking to him that day because he's wanting to, you know. He was interested in cooking. You know, he had just lost his father and, you know, my uncle. And, you know, he was trying to do some positive things just to get, to get his mind off of that loss. And so he's in the kitchen with me and, you know, I'm just telling him, and we cooked a lot of meals, you know, and I kind of cut him loose. I told him what to do with certain, you know, items that we were cooking, and, you know, we went from there, you know, and he likes to get in the kitchen with me. I've got a niece that likes to get in the kitchen with me because they want to know how to cook my, you know, they love my chicken parmesan that I make.
And you don't want the recipes and the moves to die with you, so to speak.
Right. Well, not necessarily to die. I don't go that far. I'm saying that, yes, get in here and learn how to do this so you can do it yourself. Because, you know, she's 13, the niece that was in the kitchen with me. She's 13. And I'm like, yeah, you're at that age. Like, back in the old days, hell, you were cooking even before 13. So, yeah, you need to learn how to, you know, to cook. And if this is something that you want, then, you know, here's the basic. You know, I didn't talk about substitutions in case they didn't have it. Because certain things I just make, you know, as purely from scratch as I can. And,
yeah, I feel like everybody should know at least two or three dishes to cook really well.
Uh-huh.
Just because it's going to help you in the long run. Even if it's just two or three dishes, but you know how to cook them really well, mm-hmm. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I do the meat. Like my sister, if she was through here, she could tell you anything that has protein, like, you know, meats particularly, let me do that because that's normally the main dish. And then they can take care of the side dishes. My sister makes some mean macaroni and cheese. There's only one time that I made one, you know, baked macaroni and cheese dish that rivaled hers and was actually deemed superior to hers. we didn't tell her this.
Well, we just kind of did.
We just kind of did. I was going to say, wait, we're recording this.
Oops.
Oops. But no, the only thing that'll do is make her go back and make it, you know, even banger macaroni and cheese. Like, my sister can cook. I mean, she is. That's a good question to ask her. You know, where did she learn?
Well, we'll have to get her on again sometime, maybe.
Yeah.
And have that. We could have shoot videos of cooking lessons with Darius.
Yeah.
I think that would be a great SAFTAcast thing.
It really is. It's all about, you know, it's about flavor, first of all. You know, you take whatever, especially with me, because I'm always thinking in terms of, like, you know, you're doing a loin of pork, or you're doing a pork butt, or you're doing a breast of chicken wings, chicken legs, whatever. You know, that's a blank slate. It's like, now what can I do to season? You can do all kind of stuff. You know, you can to make it taste good.
Chicken breasts are one of the most versatile foods you can have.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so much you can do with it.
You can stuff them. You can slice them up and make fajita tacos with them. There's so much. I've been eating a lot of fajita tacos here.
And one thing I like to do if I have a spare chicken breast or two is I'll just, you know, pan fry it a little bit, get it up there, season it, cut it into slices, and then put it either on a bed of rice and stir it together in a bowl, or I'll put it on a, you know, make cheap chicken Alfredo.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, and when you can do that, that's what the beauty of cooking is for me, is that, you know, you can create your own, you know, your own delicious meal, but it becomes this moment because you made it. You know, if you can make it as good as, you know, what you would get at a restaurant where you would have paid, you know, 60 times as much for what you just made, that's the thing. It's like, I can do this. And you have fun doing it. You put on some music, you know, put on that Pandora, you know, on your favorite channel, and then you just start going. You know, you don't even realize that you're cooking, because it's the muscle memory of knowing how to season and knowing, you know, what temperature the stovetop should be on, what temperature the oven should be on, all of that. It just becomes, you know, just a natural reaction. Like, you know what you're doing.
Unconscious memory.
Unconscious memory. You know, it's like how you bathe. You know what I mean? It's like, you know how to wash underneath your arms. You don't have to think about that. You know, you know how to blow your nose. You know, the things to talk about when you think about food.
Exactly. I can have like four different pots going when I'm making, you know, good spaghetti dinner. And I can have, you know, meatballs in the oven. I got pasta over here. I got the sauce brewing over here. but I know the timing instinctively of where everything is.
Right. Well, because you know when to start one so that everything finishes together.
Yeah.
You know, typically the pasta is the last thing to go in because that takes 10 minutes at most. If you like it the way I, you know, like al dente, if you like that. I was going to ask, too, when you said spaghetti, like, do you prefer meatballs or you like the ground up meat all mixed together like a...
It depends what mood I'm in. The last time I did meat sauce, it ended up being more like chili. So it ended up being like Cincinnati spaghetti where you put chili on top, spaghetti red.
Really? I didn't know that was called Cincinnati stuff.
Yeah, that's where I originally heard of it. And then I found out, oh, it's called spaghetti red. And where the hell, the Ozarks maybe? No, Montana. I don't remember. I saw it on Anthony Bourdain recently. I was like, wait a minute, that's Cincinnati style.
Hmm. That is. Well, I guess because the chili would have meat in it as well, so there's a lot of meat in that.
And a bit of heat and spice to it.
And the heat and spice, yeah. No, I like the meatballs. I understand what you mean by, like, the what kind of mood you're in, because sometimes it's like, you know, do I want to just get this over with quickly? You know, because sometimes you can pan fry them, which kind of, I think, really sears the flavor in. Or you can, the easier way is just to put the whole damn thing in the oven.
Yeah. Bake them for a half hour.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've gotten to the point where it's like, yeah, I'm not going to be standing here over this stove with all this splatter till it creates such a huge mess.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also that flood stuff. You know what I'm talking about when you, I forget what it's called, but you know what I'm talking about. Like when you bake, you know, like meatballs and stuff like that, gummy stuff that, you know, that's on the edges of the meat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't stand that. I mean, I save it to make like a gravy or a sauce if I'm like doing something like beef stroganoff or whatever. I make meatballs for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that kind of that stuff is just like they never look like what you see on the cooking shows and the commercials when they're talking about meatballs. They look so perfectly round and you know.
Yeah, most every meatball I come out with is kind of lumpy and has a flat butt on the bottom from sitting on the pan.
Mine have a flat butt too. Yeah, they're never perfectly round, and I don't know how they get them to look that way.
If they did, they would roll right off your plate.
Exactly. They need that service. And actually, I don't like them to be perfectly round, to be honest. I want you to know that I made these.
Exactly. They're not machine-made. These are handcrafted.
Yes. Yeah, and I gave up on the hand rolling, too. I bought a little mini ice cream scoop.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's what I use. And sometimes, you know, when you scoop it up, there's going to be the over the rim of the scoop. You know, you can either use that or you can trim it off, and then it becomes a little rounder. And look more like what you see in advertisements or whatever. But I just normally I want it to look rustic, and I got that from Ina Garten, you know, the Barefoot Contessa.
Mm.
I love her. I do. I watch her, and she just. I mean, there's certain things like I'm not a big sweet person, so she has a show where she's doing mostly like sweeter dishes. I don't tend to watch those episodes, but whenever she's doing something savory, yeah, I'm there. Like, I'm watching, like, I'm pausing and making notes, you know.
So you're not a heavy dessert person?
No, but I do like my sweets, though. It's an irony. It is. Like, right before we started this, I had a couple of Snickers bars. One, you know, mini Snickers bars.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just have that, you know, that need, you know, for some sweets.
Oh, I totally get it. I still have some Halloween candy lying around.
Subway has the most delicious raspberry cheesecake cookies. I swear to God. Would never think that Subway would have, you know, we have a, you've been to Knoxville, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, have you ever had Magpies dessert?
I don't think I have, actually.
But have you heard of Magpies?
I've heard of them, but I just haven't had the chance to hit them up yet.
They are the go-to for, you know, desserts and stuff. And I think that with these cookies, Subway can rival them. I mean, they are absolutely delicious.
As you... When you don't feel like cooking, are there good places in Knoxville that you like to go?
There are, and most of, you know, there's a lot of times, like today, I was supposed to go to Calhoun, which is part of a copper seller company that I work for, and because I really wanted some ribs and catfish, you know. It depends on what I'm in the mood for, but usually I don't really go out. I'll just order in something. You know, I'll think about, you know, what it is I'm in the mood for. And most times I just find that I'm either I don't really want to order out whatever it is that's available that's going to deliver where I live, or I don't want to spend the money. When I have stuff in my refrigerator and in my, you know, pantry that I can cook.
I agree. Some nights I just don't care and I'm like, you know what? I'm not a pizza maker. I'm just going to order a pizza.
And I've been wanting to do that for so long. I've been wanting to make my own pizza. I've been looking it up. Like, that's the one thing that I do. Like, when it comes to cooking, if I don't know how to do it, trust me, I'm going to find a way to learn how to do it. I mean, because, like, why not? You know, why be ignorant to, you know, to making something that, you know, other people can do? You know, it's not rocket science. You know, I can't do that, but I can make a meal. I know that. So, yeah.
On the scale of things you can learn, cooking a meal is not that high up there.
No, it shouldn't be.
You know, it's not like repairing a transmission.
Exactly. It's not. It's knowing, like, you know, you don't boil water on low, you know.
And
you
unless you've got brain problems.
Exactly. And you don't cook chicken, you know, on high, you know.
You don't rub your Thanksgiving turkey with a turtle.
Exactly. And cross-contamination. Wash your hands after handling this stuff. I have seen people cook, maybe handling all this raw meat, and then they start cutting, you know, slicing vegetables and putting the vegetables and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what the, no. Especially, you know, they're making it for a salad. If you're making it to put, like, say, in the meatloaf, like, do I put onions in my meatloaf? That's fine because it's going to cook. So that's fine, but, you know, you don't slice onions with dirty hands to put on a salad.
No. I'm absolutely paranoid about food poisoning and contamination. When I'm cooking chicken, that's the one that I fear. So I am, you know, if chicken juice lands on the counter, we're cleaning it right away.
Right. Yeah, because it splatters.
Mm-hmm.
It does. I've seen it. I've seen, like, you... Like, say you want to slice up that chicken breast or chicken thigh or something, because you can get boneless chicken thighs. And, you know, you want to slice it up and you, you know, plop it down on your cutting board, and all of a sudden you can see how it gets on you.
Yeah.
I've seen it get on me.
Now, cooking question then, since we seem to have flown into this topic, question for you. Do you wash the chicken with water? Do you rinse it real quick, or do you take it and just put it right down right away?
You know, usually, unless it feels really gummy, I don't. I have to feel it first. I don't want to wet it too much because that causes, you know, well, I can always pat it dry. But, you know, that moisture, it'll stain more than it will roast or fry. But I, now I have to feel it first. That's basically the answer to that question. I have to feel it. If it feels slimy, then yeah, I'm washing it off. As long as it still looks good, and you know.
Yeah, I ask because recently someone was telling me you shouldn't wash the chicken because that sends all the bacteria and everything all over the sink.
Well, that's a good reason not to wash it too. Yeah, but like I said, normally I don't wash it, but if it's feeling like that, I'm gonna have to, because it just makes me nervous, and I would be concerned about all of that because before I use that sink again, I sometimes I'll bleach it or, you know, just a little bit of bleach and, you know, detergent or dishwashing liquid, you know, and wash it out before I start putting, you know, my clean dishes in there. I mean, I think that's a bit of paranoia.
Better to be safe than sorry, though.
Well, yes. Yes. Yes, you want to be, you know, safer than sorry. You're right about that.
And that's not really that much to do, is just give the sink a quick rinse over and quick wipe down.
No, a good washing is what it needs when you're dealing with all of that. No, it's no rinsing. Yeah, nothing like that. No. I soak it up.
You know, I do too. I misspoke.
Okay.
I'm going to rinse it and get all the chicken germs to fly out of the sink and everywhere else. You know, this floor needs some chicken bacteria.
Exactly. Now, my mom was over here one day, and I had been doing a bunch of cooking, and I have my my spray bottle. I forget which brand it was, but it's got bleach. I think it's probably a Clorox.
One of those.
Purpose things, yeah. And she's like, make sure you spray this down, but make sure you let it sit there for a minute. And not that, you know, it was like just that filthy, but just so that, you know, this agent has an opportunity to do its job. You know what I mean? You know.
It's nice that your mother is still hovering over you in the kitchen.
Oh my goodness. You have no idea. You have no idea. She does that mother thing where she'll be looking. You can be perpendicular to each other, meaning like I'm standing at the stove and then she's like right behind me facing another way, you know. And she kind of looks over her shoulder without kind of looking at me. And that's her way, because they do that. They have this sense of how to kind of rubberneck, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Just to see what I'm doing or what somebody is doing. And then they go on, you know.
And the moment they perceive something's gone wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What are you doing? How could you even see what I was doing?
Yeah. You don't need to put that much, you know.
You don't need to put that much rosemary on the thing. I just put two sprigs. That's too much for this thing.
Oh, hell. I wish my mother would use rosemary. I don't know if she ever did use it. I've been trying to teach her, just like I've been trying to elevate her wine taste.
Are you a bit of a wine connoisseur?
See, I wouldn't say that. I love certain, you know, vintages. There's some really good Chilean wines that I've that's coming to the restaurant, and I like those a lot. Argentina makes really good wine. Oregon makes really good wine. If you want to get back to the States, so I don't. Basically, what I'm saying is, I have a major minor knowledge of wine.
Okay.
You know, like, I can't get into all the details about, like, how tannic this one is, or how, I know I don't like Chardonnays unless they're French and butter, or creamy. And I try to explain to people, like, there's a difference between creamy and buttery. I do not like a buttery white wine. I do not like a oaky white wine. I prefer just a really nice creamy, Chardonnay, to be honest, and the French do that better than anybody. And unfortunately, it's hard, it's too expensive to purchase. So I just have to, you know,
make do.
So
yeah. you're not one of these people that grabs the bottle of wine, dips two fingers in the glass, sniffs, and goes, yeah, this is quite good. This would be good for me.
No. I'll taste it. If it doesn't taste rancid, then I'm going to drink it. I don't need all the pomp and circumstance when it comes to wine. Yeah, I'm not. Like, I watched that on Frasier. I think, you know, they have episodes where someone is, you know, they're at a wine club or something, and it's just like, oh my God, I could just stab you. And that's interesting too, because David Hyde Pierce, who plays Niles Crane, he hates that character. He does. He's like, he would kill him.
If I met him in real life, I would kill him.
Exactly. I think that's his words. Like, if I met him in real life, I would kill him. I would have to kill him. And it's like, and I was like, and you played him so brilliantly. I mean, he was nominated for an Emmy every single year that show was on. And I think he won at least 4 times out of the 11 that he was nominated, which isn't bad odds.
Not at all.
Yeah. Now, I know he and Kelsey Grammer both won at the for their season finale year. They did really good work.
I've never had a problem with Kelsey Grammer.
I only have one, and I didn't know this, but I said, that man is a Republican?
But this is separating. This is when you have to separate art from artist.
Yes, indeed. Because he played a liberal on the show. And that's, you know, Nancy Carter was the same way. She was on Designing Women.
Oh, yes.
She was, she played a, you know, very liberal Democrat, but she was very conservative in real life. And I think she had a caveat in her contract to where, because of her beliefs, that for every, you know, liberal feminist, you know, speech she was given, that she got to do something on the show, you know, something else.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting to me, because I loved Designing Women when I was a kid. I'm surprised. It's like, I never kept up with the show, but when it was on, I remember loving it as a kid. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, especially when she got going. I mean, they did some really important work. They had a domestic abuse episode where Kim Zimmer was a guest star, which was awesome, because she played Reva Shane on Guiding Light, who was, you know, she's a daytime diva on soap operas. But she played this, I mean, really delicate role, and she pulled it off fabulously. What's his name? He was in Ghost. Remember the guy that was in Ghost?
Yeah.
He was the killer.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he played, he did a guest stint on Designing Women as an AIDS patient. Or he had AIDS. I wouldn't say he was a patient, but
as an HIV positive person.
Exactly.
Huh.
And both times, you know, Dixie Carter's character, you know, gave these speeches that they're not soapboxing, they're really saying some important things that, you know, at that time, they, you know, the producers felt was relevant stories to tell.
Yeah, and late 80s, early 90s, and you're doing an episode on AIDS and HIV?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty big at the time, actually, to do on television.
It is. It really is. And, you know, you watch it, and they didn't, one thing, you know, it could have gotten a little bit cheesy, you know, the way that they told, like, I wouldn't say the production values was through the roof, but it was better than, you know, your Family Matters and your Full Houses where, and, you know, you knew when the big message was coming because they started that damn music.
And then the cast would come out on stools at the end and say, we had a bit of fun tonight.
Yeah.
But gambling is a serious problem. If you or someone you know enjoys gambling a little too much, get help.
Yeah.
You know? Well, it's kind of like finding out, you know, Kirk Cameron went off the deep end after Growing Pains.
Oh, my God. You know,
to what? To the point that, like, Alan Thicke is going, yeah, if you were my son, we'd have to have a real psychiatric talk here.
Yeah. You know what? You say go off the deep end. I think he was always teetering on the edge. Because I don't think that he'd been, unless he was brainwashed, I just don't think someone who was so dogmatically, you know, consistent about, you know, being homophobic, being against any kind of, you know, civil liberty, in my opinion, if you think about, you know, if you dissect everything that he's talked about, he had to have had that in him the entire time.
It just took him to get out of the spotlight able to do it.
The fact that he can't find a damn job. Because who wants to hire someone? No. Please.
No, he's a liability now in Hollywood.
He is. He absolutely is. I mean, I was just like, you know, I liked you on Growing Pains. I really did. But look at you now. It just disgusts me.
You know, I think you're maybe right. At the time, he's on Tiger Beat magazine. He's on posters in girls' bedrooms. So and maybe you're right. He had that in him already, but he couldn't let it out at that time.
Right. Right. It's kind of like being a Disney child. You know, anybody that works for the Disney Channel, they get sued. If Miley Cyrus ever did what she's doing now while she was still under contract with them,
she'd be destroyed.
Yeah. They would sue her.
They would destroy her.
That's would.
You play by Disney's rules when you work for Disney.
They would. Mm-hmm. And it's sad. I mean, it's sad on two counts, though. It's sad that they would do that. They don't allow a person to be who they are, but it's sadder that this is the person that you want to be.
I'm fairly convinced Justin Bieber's turning into Vanilla Ice.
You know what? I think he's worse.
I think there's they both suddenly got all these tattoos and are trying to be hardcore and stay culturally relevant. But in some twisted way, I'm watching like a train wreck at Bieber now. Because I've seen this so many times in culture before. I actually told my students once, I'm like, give him 5 years, we'll find him dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or he's going to look like that rock singer who's out of rehab as like, in to quote Henry Rollins about Don Henley, I party hardy but clean.
Yeah, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I think that Justin Bieber is on a far track for winding up being just completely destroyed. At least with Vanilla Ice, he has this show. I forget the name of it, but I saw a clip of it. You know, it was a promo for it. And the man sounds smart. what they was doing was smart. You know, it wasn't some it's kind of a reality show.
The house one where he renovates houses or something?
Yeah, that one, yeah. He knows what he's talking about. It's almost like he's trying to take, you know, change his image. He's turning his life around. I know that some of these things can be scripted, but he seems to have gained some knowledge with age about how to conduct himself.
Well, to come full circle here, you know, Justin Bieber put out a Christmas album a couple of years ago, as expected, you know, from a teen idol. Yeah. And it has one of the strangest tracks I've ever heard in a Christmas song, because I saw the track listing and then I saw the guest and I was like, what? And it is Justin Bieber doing The Little Drummer Boy featuring Busta Rhymes.
You did say...
And Busta goes full out in that song, too.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. He can only do that.
Busta only has one mode when he's recording, and that is full on Busta Rhymes.
It's loud and it's aggressive.
But loud, growly, and fast.
Yeah, it's fast, yes. I agree with that. That is, you know, I need to listen. You know what? Sometimes I feel like I need to listen to these songs that people were talking about before I make an intelligent decision. It's kind of like watching movies. Like, I'm a huge, to change the subject slightly to films, I'm a huge, like, Oscar trivia buff.
Are you, beyond the Oscars, are you a big film buff?
I'm a big film buff, too. The only thing is that I don't get to see enough of them. That's the only thing. It's hard for me to sit in the theater and watch because I can't pause it when I want to, you know, get up and smoke a cigarette or make myself a cocktail or something. I can't do that. I have to sit there. Whereas I was like, okay, I'll just wait till it comes out on Netflix or whatever, you know, I'll just wait.
Yeah.
But eventually I'll see it. But when it comes to, like, award season, which we're in it now, you know, it's like betting on horse races or, hell, gambling in general for, like, sports events.
But it is illegal to bet on the Oscars.
Well, we do, well.
I did find that out. It is illegal to actually gamble on the Oscars.
Really?
Yeah. That's why you don't see Vegas odds on it. And same with elections. You can't gamble on elections.
Mm. Wow. Well, I don't do Vegas gambling. I just, you know, people put in, you know, $5 a piece and they fill out a ballot.
Well, that's different, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what we do. We don't do the, you know, Vegas odds.
Yeah.
Gambling. No, you know, you put your money in, you have your Oscar ballot that they provide for you, and you choose.
Kind of like picking the Final Four or a football pool.
Yeah.
It's a friendly little thing, and then to the loser, they have to do something stupid, you know?
Oh, well, you know, I could add that to, you know, to the tradition, but I think that we've gotten a little too old for those kind of shenanigans.
You're only 35. You get to determine what that means.
Well, a lot of my friends are my age or older. Slightly older.
Doesn't matter.
So I know, and it does to them, because it's like, it does to me. That's why I'm saying, like, no. I don't think I'd be, you know, up to that. It's like, you know, you either win or you lose. And I win. I won last year. And one of my coworkers, he's a cook. And that's his secondary job. His primary job is as an editor with the University of Tennessee Press. and he's very knowledgeable, and he's like me. You don't have to see a film to know who's going to win.
It's true. Know?
Because we research. We were both English majors at the University of Tennessee at the same time. We both won the university's highest writing award at the same time. We didn't know this until we started working together. I mean, years later, we found this out. And so we know how to, that's what you do. You research. You see who's tracking. You know, who's winning what. Mm-hmm. You know?
The Golden Globes are often a good indicator of what's going to happen.
Yeah, the SAG, any of the Guild Awards you want to look at.
The BAFTAs.
Yeah, the BAFTAs. Like, you know, like DGA, for example, they are probably the most consistently predictor of who's going to win Best Director. There's been few occasions, extremely few occasions, where the Best Director for the Oscar did not come from the person that... or didn't go to the person who won the DGA, you know. So yeah. you can bet on that. And people, they want to bet on people that they want to win. It's like, yeah, that's nice. You want them to win. You think they should win, but they're not going to win because the other person has won everything.
And that's
what's going to happen.
I hate it when there's like a really bad toss up. This past year, I was really torn on. I knew that Bryan Cranston would win for Breaking Bad, but I was like, Kevin Spacey, if it wasn't the final season of Breaking Bad, this would be a dogfight.
Right.
It's too close to call. I'm just looking at the clock here. We are almost out of time, man.
Oh, goodness.
We've been talking about, and here we are, as always, thinking, oh, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah, with last year, Matthew McConaughey losing out to Benedict Cumberbatch. You my love. I love Benedict Cumberbatch. But I thought that was Matthew's to lose. And he did.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that Benedict, he's an amazing actor. But yeah, like you said, we're out of time. Like, is there anything else that we can get in, like, to close it up?
Well, let me say that. Let me throw it at this. Do you have anything coming up that you want to promo or promote?
I really don't. I'm keeping kind of quiet on my personal work in terms of like writing poetry. I'm waiting to finish these book reviews, as I had mentioned earlier.
So you're on a little bit of a hiatus with it.
I'm on hiatus, yeah.
So where can the folks find you, though, on the internet?
You can find me on Facebook. You can Google me at either Darius Stewart, but the majority of my work is going to be under D. Antoine Stewart. And Antoine is A-N-T-W-A-N. You can find me there.
Are you on the Twitter at all?
I don't tweet. I'm sorry. I keep wanting to revise that. I do. I don't tweet. I don't really do Instagram and all of that. I am on Facebook, and you know, there are things that I have to say that sometimes I'll post on there if you want to hear what's going on. But I don't really try to advertise that too much. I just post it, and whoever wants to read it, you can read it.
Well, definitely. Well, I encourage our listeners to check you out, man, because it has been a pleasure talking with you.
You too, man. This has been fun. You say we're going to be chatting, and it is. It's like there's so many ways that we could have done this.
We could have talked about bartending. We just barely scratched the surface about your interest in movies and TV.
Yeah. How to Get Away with Murder. Watch that show.
I'll put that on my list.
Yeah, Viola Davis is an effing revelation. I mean, you cannot keep your eyes off of this woman. if she does win the Emmy, she's at least going to be nominated.
I will put that on my hit list among Orange is the New Black and, well, I'm just got to finish off now. They're about to end at Sons of Anarchy. So yeah. That's only got like 2 weeks left. So, but I'll put that on my hit list on your recommendation.
Yeah, you should.
Seems like whenever, you know, like one of our previous guests, Danny Huey, came on and recommended House of Cards, I finally sat down with that. And I'm like, damn, you were right. So I'm going to add that to How to Get Away with Murder. I'm going to add that to my hit list.
The only thing I have to say about How to Get Away with Murder, there's a lot of sex in that show. I'm like, okay, what are you doing? Are you trying to sell sex to sell the show?
Do you really need to sell sex at this point in the world?
Do we have to, obviously sexualize like that? But I think that the way that they edit it, and the way that, like I said, I can't say it enough, Viola Davis is just, she's a beast.
I will check it out, hopefully in the near future, maybe over winter break here. I'll give it a listen. Darius, it has been a pleasure talking with you, man, and maybe we should do this again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it.
And next time I'm in Knoxville, man, I'm going to look to you for food.
Oh, yes. Please, we can go in there. We can talk. We can cook some chicken legs, and I'll show you how to do it.
I'm actually going to be up there for New Year's, I believe, so maybe I'll get the chance to see you and meet you then.
Okay.
All right. Take care of yourself, man.
All right, you too.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.